Okay, last session. Okay. Mr. Turner, go ahead, get up there because I'm going to wrap before you get into your thing. So, and I don't want to steal any of your thunder, but ultimately I've got to give credit to this gentleman for helping me start the smart content vertical within Mesa, and it's also kind of morphed since we started it. But ultimately, it wasn't like a cocktail napkin or some grand plan. We just realized how fundamental this was to us making the next great leap in terms of this business. So I thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the Chief Technology Officer for MarkLogic. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Matt Turner.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much. Hey, guy, thanks. You did a little bit of good work for making up for putting me last. That's good. These guys told me that I was the headliner. They say, you get, and it turns out I'm just the guy who gets, the keynote, right, exactly. I'm just the guy that gets to go last. But as Guy said, I'm Matt Turner. I'm a CTO at MarkLogic. MarkLogic is a database company. And so it's not going to surprise you that I'm going to talk about data. And specifically, I'm going to talk a little bit about data, the ways you use data. Think of it kind of as a little bit of the how. So how do you get there to a lot of the whys and whats we've been talking about? We've been talking a lot about the impact of using data, breaking down silos. It's great content today. And I'm going to just go a little bit deep. I know it's right before drinks, but that's what I got. And talk about the data that gets you to smart content. And that's actually where I'm going to start. And as Guy said, I was around for the original conversation, Mary and Guy, not just conversations in bars, famous phone calls defining this to get us to this point of having a smart content summit in 2014. Now, I don't know if you guys are keeping track. It's 2018 now. So that was a long time ago. And it doesn't seem like it. It seems like the things we're talking about now, the things we had in mind, were very, very current. But it was a long time ago. In fact, it was so long ago that Guy Finley had hair. So I have a picture here. And actually, no. Sorry. Guy looks... Guy looks exactly the same. But it was a long time ago, and it was this idea, and this is one of the first slides, that you know the content is the middle, but there's this data all around it, and it's generated from every phase, from the inception all the way through making the content and all the way to the archive and infinity. And I think the infinity was the placeholder for everything that we're now talking about, with these archives becoming the main, the part of the main event. The content never dies. It just keeps going on. And at the time, so remember, this was actually a long time ago, this was largely pretty far future-looking, and it was largely aspirational to say, hey, let's look at all the content around the data. Now, if you think about it now, it's pretty much what we're doing, and the value we see in our content is really, really connected with it. But again, this wasn't... You know, it wasn't all known there. And so, you know, that's where we started. So I want to just kick off a little bit and to say, you know, in the meantime, we've been at MarkLogic fortunate to be involved with some projects that really pick up this theme. The first is the BBC platform. So the BBC folks kind of threw out the book of the traditional way of managing things, and they brought it out for their first Olympics, the host company Olympics. But this platform now, going forward, really looks at collecting all the data and organizing it and then putting the content into play across every platform. So all the devices, all the ways that you consume content from the BBC, and also all their partners kind of follow that smart content pattern. And we also got involved with the SNL app, so Saturday Night Live's app that really bridged the gap between the way the consumers, the fans, thought about the show and the way that the show was actually recorded in its source data. Broke a lot of new ground. It's a great app. We're actually going to go a little bit more into that, so I'll kind of go quickly. And we also had the chance to get involved with our customer Disney and also the ETC with the Suitcase project. And this is now looking into that part of the beginning part of that process. You know, the creation, the production data. We actually have great content today about production data. And this is actually now 2 years ago that we were involved with the production of the film that gathered and curated and organized the data as it was going. And, you know, took a stab at really understanding all the different complexities there. There's some great lessons learned coming out of that. And one of the things that came out of that is the Disney Genome Project that Anthony Cardo presented at this last summit. And Anthony talked about the fact that the explosion of data and the explosion of the ways of generating data. So we talked about AI, machine learning, all the amazing work that's going on to generate data. That really means you'd have to have a plan. And I like to think of his project, Genome Architecture, what he's talking about is way, way far future thinking than anything I've seen, because it's a plan to just manage the data as it's coming in. All right, so I told you I was going to talk about data. All these projects have in common one very, very important factor, which is they did not take a traditional database approach. Now, traditional database approach, how you organize information, is rows and columns. And it starts off innocently enough, making some rows and some columns. Pretty easy to do. But metadata is really, really sneaky. So even that can really, really bring you down with lots of complexity as you begin to think about new things to define. And not only that, think about the fact that you have to create the exact data structures for all your data. Imagine if somebody said, hey, we want to take all your data around, all your content, and you have to define everything perfectly to fit. It really starts to bog down quickly, but it really also comes down to not just the source data, but the way you categorize it. So hierarchical fixed taxonomies, and I did warn you I was going to talk about data, but this is how you begin to organize it. And these also have their own problems. And again, you know, this does start off innocently enough, and a lot of people do projects modeling data this way, but you very, very quickly get to this, or, and I could just keep going with the complexity, because this is only a small part of a metadata model, but it's what one of my colleagues calls Irwin's of unusual size. Large, large database structures that, you know, nobody really even understands, because they've just simply been modeled and remodeled over and over again. Now this is, and there's a lot of talk today about data and silos, this is the result of that. You have, take the smart content concepts, kind of lay them out on their side. And you think about, you know, the inception, all these different processes. And then you think about all that great data that's generated. And the truth is that every single part of the process, again, the whole smart content idea, is that everybody needs access to this data. Every part of every system, every function needs access to this data. But because you're looking at it in this traditional way, because you have to model everything, because you need to put it into the rows and columns, and you create these 100, 200 table databases, the data is in silos. It's in different systems that are purpose-built for each part of the process. So this is a little bit of that why behind the scenes. When people say data's in silos, they don't say data's in silos because we really like silos. They say data's in silos because people are getting their jobs done. And the way that databases today mostly work is that they can only be done for one purpose. So you end up with this picture, and I'd argue that's not smart. We're here to talk about smart content. That's not going to get you there. So what all those projects have in common is they took a very different approach. They took an approach of thinking about the data as flexible. Tree structures, I kind of call this the shorthand, the NoSQL model. But it's a tree structure for actually the asset information itself. There are a couple of advantages. One is you can record anything. If you have an extra date, you just simply attach it. The second is that it doesn't have to be the same for each record. You think about going back to SNL. It seems like a simple problem. It's 5,000 episodes, 5,000 short sketches. Well, they were, of course, over the history of now 42 years, completely different systems that recorded all that different data. So they looked all different. Well, you could normalize it, or you could take this approach and actually capture it all the way it is. But that's not just the only way you can get this job done. You need to take the rest of that data and now make a leap from fixed categories to semantics. Semantic ontologies that describe the way the world really is and the entities in the world the way it really is and how they fit together. Now, this is also not that new. It's been around for a while. But the big difference here is that this kind of data modeling is around, and it's actually what's behind things like, well, the library sciences. It's also what is behind something like a neural network, or when you hear people talk about graphs, they're talking about this data. But what all of our projects have in common is that they've married these two things together, and this is the actual data model behind them. It's the asset information described as trees, the ontologies mapping out and actually bringing that complexity and richness of the data into the system. And that's really what I think is the underlying, and again, going under the hood, but that's, I think, one of the big recipes for getting to smart content, is bringing that together. So we'll take a look at the SNL app and how they use this. And there's some great interfaces. some search interfaces. One of the things that I just have to keep mentioning, if you haven't seen the app, and you really should, is that there's a carousel. So it tees things up for you, just starts playing videos, and you can swipe by if you don't like it. And so the guys at NBC, this is NBC Entertainment Digital, they talked about it as a cross between Pandora and Tinder. So you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. But the way that you find things is based on using this data model. So here we're doing a search for Kristen Wiig, and even before you get there, you begin to see things in the data to explore information. Oh, do you mean Kristen Wiig? Well, that's actually this person. All the data, and then you can eventually get to Lawrence Welk's show, and then I don't know if anybody knows the character with the tiny hands. Does anybody know her? Does anybody know her name? Yeah, nobody knows her name. Her name is Dohiz Mraharela. And I know that because I just use the app to look it up because I keep forgetting it. But nobody knows her name. But you can look in and you can actually search on the NBC app for tiny hands and you'll get that character. That data is not in that data in the asset record. It's not jammed into that record in another row, in another column. It's in this very, very rich semantic data. So that's how these guys used it and put it into action. Help you find things, help you make connections, help you, you know, get all that smartness and richness around the content and put it into operations. And what we've discovered, what's going on now with us in this industry, but also other industries, is that people are starting to add more and more types of data together. So I've largely just said, oh, this is how you do better asset metadata. But it turns out it's also a great way to link in products, your finance and sales data. Incredibly important information that's now connected or can be connected, or your customer data. It's a big leap now happening here, and actually, SNL app does understand who you are as a customer. It does start to attach concepts to you. And actually, any kind of data can be modeled and linked and integrated using this pattern. And so, looking back at our apps and looking back what's common in them, is it's not just that you use this data model. It's actually that because when you begin to add more and more information, we've actually discovered and kind of now codified as part of what we do at MarkLogic is not just how to put the data together, but a pattern to actually make an engine for integrating data. And we call it the operational data hub. And this is kind of taking things up a level from this basic data modeling and say, you know what, this generic pattern, if you have any kind of data, anything that's in your organization, you can take it, and using this model, you can bring it into the system. So that's the first thing we do, is ingest it. You can harmonize that data. This is where you make all those connections. You use the semantic data to say, oh, it is related to this thing. That is about the Lawrence Welk show. And by the way, that user particularly seems to like the Lawrence Welk show sketches. That's in the harmonization part. And then you have an engine that's able to deliver that data out and deliver it to sometimes the end user, but often to other systems downstream that need to get that integrated view. And one of the really important things about this data hub pattern is it's not actually the source information. So I went back to that beginning picture, we'll kind of come back to it, where everybody's creating data that's purpose-built for that one business. When we think about what we did with the suitcase project, we didn't say to everybody, okay, everybody use a different set of tools. Instead, we actually said, okay, your tools are all generating really great data, but using this operational data hub pattern, we're going to put a hub in place that takes all that raw data, harmonizes and makes the connections, and then actually starts to show you, and we actually had something that would, you play the clip and you'd see all the different data from all the different tools at the exact point of that scene. We actually can use this as a separate data set that actually brings it together. So for us, this is a really big advance. This pattern of bringing the data together is actually a universal engine, and you can apply it to almost any situation. And so that's where I'm going to kind of leave you with some of these examples. So one of the things we've done in this industry with Sony Pictures is getting introduced by, the whole smart content idea. Hey, you guys are great. We have the smart content. But maybe it's not really titles or metadata that's our problem. We're actually helping Sony Pictures with financial consolidation. Five different financial systems, some of them old mainframes, and with some of the new rule changes, that data needed to be addressed differently, but was a very difficult thing to extract all that data, change all the processing. And instead, the operational data hub pattern allowed Sony Pictures to go in and create a data hub from those systems, create an actual consolidated picture of the finance, and then feed it to a new system that was actually doing the data processing. It's a completely different kind of project for us in this industry, but it's actually something that's really going, that's matching what we're doing at, in the world at large. And it turns out that this pattern is actually very useful, and I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of a glimpse of things happening outside our world, because we're doing things like helping Airbus create data hubs that understand the complexity of a plane, and figure out whether or not they need to test things that are actually configured and tested in the whole world of aerospace. Now, this is not in this world, but I wanted to draw the parallel because it turns out that making a plane is actually about as complex as making a movie. And this kind of pattern works pretty well. Or, for instance, we're doing the same kind of thing at Chevron, where you know we're actually looking at the refinery, linking all the data together, and then helping the guys who are going out to make a repair, see the data that used to be in 5 or 6 different systems, see it all at once, saving them a couple of hours because they take the right tools, and when they go out to make the repair, they actually have the information instead of finding it out later. And that's kind of the power of this data pattern, is that it's a universal model. Oh, wait, I forgot my last joke. And then there's this guy. Now, we don't actually do anything with SpaceX. I just thought it was so cool that they did this a couple weeks ago that I wanted to use it in a presentation. So I put it up there. But actually, we are talking to SpaceX, and even though they can launch a car into space, in fact, don't forget to put the towel in the glove compartment. Does anybody know why there's a towel in the car? Yeah, thank you. Thank you, some of you. That says don't panic for a reason. Don't forget that, you know, go to the end to actually include the towel. It turns out they have the same kind of problems. Data's in silos, they can't make the right connections. So even the geniuses at SpaceX can make use of this pattern. And that's kind of what I want to leave you with, this is what the pattern's about. Looking at that whole idea of smart content around every stage, and then instead of having everything in its own little silo, and making use of that valuable data, instead of having everything in its own little silo, actually having a system that can create a data hub and can help you get smart with your content. So thank you very much, and I think we're on to drinks, right?
That's it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Matt Turner, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that was deep, Matt.